Hi, this is Kurt Mortensen, and welcome back to the Persuasion Institute. Today we're going to talk about inoculation and objections and some of the latest research we're finding on human nature and why we do what we do. So let's spend some time talking about inoculation, what it is. What we want to do is teach you to pre-solve objections before they even happen. What we're finding in our studies at the Persuasion Institute is this. Great persuaders solve objections before they even happen. That is the key. Old style persuaders will say, oh, objections are great. They indicate interest. It means they're listening. This is true. But if you're getting the same objections over and over and over again, why would you let somebody run their car into a tree when you can help them avoid it? Because that's what an objection is. It's a mentally, you're crashing into something. Now, it could be just a fender bender, or it could total the car out where they're not even listening to anything else you say for the rest of the presentation. So we want to teach you to help you understand to pre-solve objections before they even happen. That's what great persuaders are doing. Anytime there is an objection, there's just kind of a roadblock. Something's happening. Something's not quite right. And most of the time, you're not even solving the right objection. And we'll talk more about that later. So let me give you background on inoculation. Basically, what you're doing is defending against any predetermined attacks against you or your position, your product, your service, your idea. And this is where it comes from. During the Korean War, Americans were shocked, I mean really shocked, at the number of captured soldiers who willingly cooperated with the enemy. It had never happened before in these type of numbers. Initially, they wondered whether the soldiers had been tortured and beaten into submission. Investigation revealed that the soldiers had not been tortured, but rather they had been subjected to brainwashing sessions led by a skillful questioner. Soldiers were questioned about American ideology such as freedom, democracy, and equality, and surprisingly, many of the soldiers had great difficulty defending their beliefs. The captors persisted in attacking beliefs the soldiers couldn't explain until the soldiers began to doubt the validity of those beliefs. If the captors could get the soldiers that far, getting them to commit treason became much easier, almost like the foot-in-the-door technique. New soldiers from that point on began receiving more extensive political training in addition to the typical military instruction. No soldier would ever again hold vaguely the defined beliefs or be unable to defend America verbally or militarily. How did the military train their soldiers to withstand the potential verbal attacks as had been perpetrated against them in the Korean War? What would keep them strong in the face of such adversity, preventing them from crumbling? Well, the method we talked about is called inoculation. Now, of course, you know the term inoculation comes from the medical field. What we're doing is injecting a weak dose of the virus into a patient. What that does is inoculates or prevents the patient from actually getting the disease. The body's immune system fights off the weak form of the disease and then is prepared when the full disease attacks. Also, when you're presenting to an audience who has an opposing viewpoint standing in the wing, you have to inoculate them with a weakened form of the other side of the argument. If you know someone is going to attack your viewpoint, you prepare your audience in advance for the attack. That is inoculation. Or you prepare your prospect, your audience, in advance not to bring up the objection you keep hearing. The idea is to address the issues that your opponent will bring up and then directly refute them. The point to understand is that the inoculation must be a weak form of the virus. If you inoculate the human body with the strong strain of the disease, they could become sick or even die. The dose must be weak enough to prepare the body for the stronger virus, but not so strong that it overpowers the body. In persuasion, you don't want to give strong doses. You don't want to give your prospects all the ammunition from the other side of the persuasive message. On the other hand, if you don't prepare your audience for what they are about to hear, the sting of your opponent's words, logic, or testimony might be too much for them to handle, and they could switch sides. Or buy somebody else's product or service. We are surrounded by countless examples of inoculation every day, many of which can be seen and used in the courtroom. You know, the attorney stands up and says, the prosecution's going to say my client's mean, ugly, evil, and a terrible husband, and a bad member of society. But this is not true, as I will show you over the next couple of weeks. So think about it. So when the other side starts acting exactly the way the defense said she would, she gives the jurors a way to ignore or even discount the prosecutor's arguments. Street gangs use the same inoculation tool. When they're attempting to convert someone to their beliefs and to join the gang, they will inoculate and prepare the future gang members by telling him his parents, teachers, and cops will encourage him not to join a gang. And they will tell him all the reasons his opponents will give, fueling him with the ammunition for the impending attack. This preparation enables him to handle the oncoming assault from parents, teachers, or even police officers. And society needs to understand the importance of inoculation in regards to smoking, drugs, teenage pregnancy, or other issues we know our children will come in contact with. Who should be the first contact with your children? You or a drug dealer? When you inoculate people, they can mentally prepare arguments supporting their stance. This reinforcement prevents them from switching teams. The more prepared they are, the more they'll hold fast to their attitudes and beliefs. The more deeply this reinforcement is ingrained, the more difficult it will become for them to be swayed. Back to the drug dealer. Now think about it. If you've never warned or pre-warned your children about a drug dealer approaching them to get them to take drugs, that's going to call them chicken, everyone's doing it, you have to try it, do it right now. Now, as a parent, if you've warned them, say, this is going to happen. They're going to make you feel kind of cheap. They're going to make you feel like a chicken. They're going to say this, this, and this. So when it actually happens, they have ammunition. They've thought it through. You've inoculated them against that attack. Whether you do it in that situation or any type of persuasion situation, it's critical. So you ask yourself, when do you use inoculation? Well, the correct answer depends on the composition and attitude of your audience. If they already agree with your position, you only need to present one side. If they disagree with you, you need to present both sides. If an opposing speaker is going to follow you, you definitely need to inoculate. Giving both sides of the argument works better with an audience members who already know something about the opposition's strength. Inoculation works better with knowledgeable prospects because it communicates respect for your opponent's intelligence. If the audience is full of committed believers, you win points by acknowledging there is another position. Inoculation increases your credibility and your ability to persuade. By presenting them with the other side of the argument, you show the audience that you know how they feel and think. You are not afraid of the truth you've done in your research. You prepare your audience in advance about negative things someone could say about you or your product. You will win a great deal of respect and power when you answer objections or questions before they're even asked. When you know, really know your audience, not only can you prepare for pending attacks, but you also can answer questions in advance with inoculation. This gives your listeners a solution in their minds. Imagine persuading a prospect about the need to use your product. The competition will call your product the most expensive product on the market. You know this so you can inoculate. You tell your prospects up front that this is the highest quality, longest lasting, most expensive product on the market. You let them know why you are the best and the most expensive, how your product has won most of the industry awards, lasted longest, and gives the most value for the money. Or even something like planting the seed that you get what you pay for. These arguments, strategically planted in the mind of your prospects, will enable them to access these facts when the competition belittles you or your product. So just to recap a few things here. The application hopefully is apparent to you that you can use it to strengthen existing attitudes or beliefs or maybe even behaviors. You can use it to solve objections before they happen. The key also is to warn them of an attack, something that's going to happen to them, because when people are threatened or they're in a persuasive situation, what happens is they begin to generate possible defenses for what's happening to them. And if that's not in their mind, when that knee-jerk reaction, if it's too expensive, I can't afford it, I don't have the time, I need to talk to my spouse. If there's not a defense there, then that knee-jerk reaction will cause the prospect probably never to talk to you again. You have to prepare them in a way that it doesn't overwhelm them. Of course, that's why we say weak. You're not going to give someone the full strength of the disease. That would have devastating effects. So why does inoculation work? Well, some of you don't care. You just want to know that it works. Well, it does work. I'm telling you that it works. It's just how our brain processes information. And in persuasion, the reality is the more you think about something, the stronger the attitude becomes. And the whole point is to get people to think for themselves. Remember, great persuaders help others persuade themselves. I've told you time and time again, the moment they sense that you're trying to persuade them to do something, the walls of resistance go up and they will resist you. That's why inoculation is used to help people persuade themselves. To help them develop stronger attitudes, beliefs, or behaviors, whatever it is, it will work. We find out at the Persuasion Institute, did they trust you? Did they like you? Did they feel like you were lying to you? Were you being a little deceptive? Those things are important to know. Now, understand with objections. Again, they might lie to you. You need to learn to pre-solve them with inoculation. But a big point, I really want to open up your eyes, make a little aha for you, to help you really understand something about objections. Because what we'll do is we'll take industry, and this goes across many different industries. We'll monitor people in those different industries, and we'll listen to their presentations, what they're doing right, what they're doing wrong. Of course, we'll help them out. But here's an interesting thing that we found out in the research that wasn't even on the radar screen, is this. Two different people, same presentation, same industry, but they were getting two completely different objections most of the time. Now, every industry has their top five objections, and you want to know how to handle those if they do come up, if you haven't been able to inoculate them, if they surprise you. There are ways to handle objections. We need to do that in another CD. But understand this. When it comes to objections, what we found out, which was a real eye-opener, was this. That the objections you get the most are the objections you still have. Let me clarify that. The objection you keep getting over and over and over again is the objection you still have in your brain that you haven't even solved. Do you feel that your product's too expensive? Well, you're going to get it's too expensive time and time and time again. You have challenges with your guarantee or the service department? Those will come up time and time and time again. Auto ship or with customer service, whatever it is, those will tend to appear on the radar screen more than others because you haven't solved it in your mind. And you need to do a little soul searching to really clarify it and understand you need to resolve it in your mind before you can help a prospect resolve it in their mind. And that's true with inoculation or even solving objections after they happen. You need to think about that. What is the main objection that you get over and over and over again? First of all, you're not solving it right. Second of all, you need to solve it before it happens. And third, it's probably one you still have stuck in your belief system in your brain somewhere that you need to spend some time and solve it so you can become a powerful persuader. So understand our whole goal here is to pre-solve any objection, any concern before it happens. It makes you a more powerful persuader. Most people haven't even thought about this. But let's back up and talk a little bit about objections. You really have to understand the psychology behind objections, and hopefully you've listened to the psychology of objections. Now, first of all, remember, as we look at objections, most of the objections you are getting are knee-jerk reactions, are not even true, and for the most part, over 50% of the time, you are solving the wrong objections. It just came out, and sometimes it even shocks your prospects. They just said it came out. Let's talk about price, for example. You've heard it's too expensive. I can't afford it. You know, and the studies show that 66% of the time that's a lie, but they know that they can get rid of you. You're solving the wrong objections. Most people jump in, they try to solve it because they've heard it before and they have a great answer. That's not going to convert anybody to your product or service. So first of all, think about it. Is it the true objections? There's ways to understand that when you really learn to listen and read your prospect. Because things like price, only 6% of things we buy are bought on price. I mean, really, if you think about it, most of the things you own were not bought on price, but that's something stuck in your brain. So think about it. First of all, most of the objections you are getting are knee-jerk reactions. They're not even true. The second thing I want to point out, the reason for the CD, is I want you to learn to pre-solve, especially the top 2-3 objections that you get. What can you say? What can you do to make sure that objection never comes up in their mind? Very important. When you start doing this, going down this path, you will become an incredible persuader. To learn to read your prospect like an open book, to understand if they're lying to you, if it's time to go for the call to action or the close, is it time to shift gears? Are they confused? Because I've told you this too, a confused mind says no. First of all, is it the true objection? Second of all, learn to pre-solve it. Third, and here's an eye-opener for many of you, it's interesting if we study different people at the Persuasion Institute. Remember, my job at the Persuasion Institute is talk to the prospects after you have. Because they're lying to you. They're not telling the truth. They don't want to hurt your feelings. And so if you came across as arrogant or condescending or dumb or weird or stupid or strange, they're not going to tell you but they'll tell me. Since we're talking about network marketing, here's an interesting one too, is people join up, they get all excited, and if they're not prepared, if they're not inoculated for what their friends and family are going to call them when they tell them to join a network marketing company, you've blown it. Because some people just don't understand network marketing. They're going to call it stupid or dumb. You did what? It's a pyramid scheme. Of course, that's not true, but if they're not ready for those attacks, if they're not inoculated with that, that's why many people quit so soon, is they're not prepared for that onslaught. Another area that works great in the world of inoculation is your credibility, or credibility inoculation. If you know you're going to a situation where your credibility is going to be low, they're not going to believe you, you have to understand that you can inoculate. There's different things that you can do. Because you know, if you're not credible and they don't believe you, nothing else is going to matter. That's one of my favorite quotes from Jerry Spence. He's a trial lawyer. He's never lost a case. He says, "One can stand as the greatest orator the world has known, possess the quickest mind, employ the cleverest psychology, and have mastered all the technical devices of argument. But if one is not credible, one might just as well preach to the pelicans." They're not going to listen, just like the pelicans. So to look at your credibility, you need to find out who your audience knows and respects. Can you get their endorsement, either in person or writing? Great persuaders know that it's okay to borrow the credibility of others. That's inoculating. You can borrow their credibility. If they say you're the best person out there, you can borrow that. When you gain their support, the audience will consider you to be more credible. If you're a known expert in your field, be sure to communicate that you've studied it, you researched it, that you've met with other experts, and maybe you need to prepare to drop the names of people your audience will recognize. So let's talk about some real-life examples. In school programs in the United States, what they did, they wanted to help students resist peer pressure to smoke. We see it time and time again. People get addicted during those early years. And so what happened is high school students, they conducted group sessions where they taught the younger students, so they had the older students teaching the younger students, on how to construct counter-arguments, what to do when there was peer pressure, or what to do when their friends try to get them to smoke. For example, they'd be called chicken or stupid or it's not going to hurt or just this once. And they were taught, they were inoculated, they were prepared. So when their friends or peers called them chickens, they would answer, "Well, I'd be a real chicken if I smoked just to impress you." And they gave them some other ones too, but it made a big difference because now they had ammunition when they felt pressure to smoke. You see this with the phone companies. You have the big phone companies, of course, AT&T, MCI, and Sprint. You see this in the cell phone business, same thing. Is that they have to inoculate their customers, that someone's going to call, they're going to try to offer you a good deal, but we're going to have the best deals here. Just call us up, we'll match it, preparing them that people are going to try to get them to switch. Because if they weren't ready with that and someone showed them a better deal, they're going to switch every time. You see it in politics, that one side says, well, the other side's going to say this, and this side's going to say this, they prepare them for it. Or if you were working in a gym, well, I don't have the time, you want to sell gym memberships, I don't have the time. You inoculate them and says, it's interesting about working out is that it actually gives you more time. It gives you more time because you think better, you get more done, you sleep less. That's the great thing about exercise. Now, when you say that before that objection comes up, you've inoculated them and it's not going to come up. Or when someone's watching an infomercial, you don't want them to think, wow, I can't do this, you know. What they do is they'll pull someone from, well, I better not mention a state, I might offend somebody. They pull from somewhere, and they have no teeth, hair's not combed. They say, "Well, I made $5,000 in 2 weeks." And you're thinking, wow, if they can do it, I can do it. You also, in network marketing, when people, if it's too expensive, they say, well, first of all, they start talking about franchises, how much it costs to get a McDonald's, how much it really costs to get into your own business. And when you get the investment price of a network marketing company, it is nothing. Now, be very careful here. If you have a large audience and you need to inoculate for credibility, the best thing that I recommend is to have somebody introduce you. You help write a script that identifies everything the audience would want to know to give you instant credibility. Because if you do it yourself, you'll run the risk of coming across as cocky or even arrogant because you're trying to list all these great things that you've accomplished. Now, I know why you're doing it for the credibility, but if you do it the wrong way, it will backfire on you and you will have no credibility, and that's important. Another way to inoculate with credibility is to be calm and organized and authoritative. How you come across. You're not in a rush. You're not out of control. Very important. Another thing you could help with your credibility could be your appearance. Is it polished? Is it professional? The way you look, the way you dress, the way you appear. I mean, do you appear self-assured and control? And what type of sources are you using? Facts, statistics, evidence? The evidence you use is a big piece of this evidence pie. Have you done the research on your audience? Can they tell that you know about them? And when you get an introduction, you talk about your background, your expertise, your qualifications. Have somebody else say they can brag about you all day long, but display or promote your qualifications if you need to, or if it's considered, you may be able to display or promote your qualifications during this process. You can adopt a language or style suitable to the listener and topic and setting. Watch your vocal fillers. Try to find similarities. Be credible. Be organized. Know your position. And, of course, be prompt. We know that people who are always late are considered less competent and composed and less sociable than those who arrive on time. Simple things, but those things will inoculate and give you more credibility before you even start to speak, before you even start to persuade. Another form of inoculation you might want to consider is likability inoculation. We know that if they don't like you, they're not going to do business with you. It doesn't matter what your product, service, or idea is. So how can you get people to like you before maybe even meet them? Or as you're establishing that relationship before they've had that knee-jerk reaction of, I don't like this person. Remember, most persuasion is done on a subconscious level. So let's talk about likability for a little bit, connecting with people. That's one of the laws of persuasion, of course, the law of connectivity. Of course, if you can have somebody introduce you, just like credibility, or say that you're a great person, you're fun to be around, great friend, that will help. Another way that can cause instant likability, if you're starting to speak to an audience, either one-on-one or to a large group, humor. Wow, did that take me off guard? I started doing research in persuasion, motivation, and influence. Now, I knew humor had an impact, but I had no idea how big that impact was. Humor works. Getting them to smile. Now, I'm not asking you to be a stand-up comedian like Jerry Seinfeld, but anybody can have a little humor in their life. Anybody can get someone else to smile. If you're going to say a joke or a funny story, make sure you practice it. Because the reality is when you start employing humor, they're either going to laugh with you or feel sorry for you. That's just what it comes down to. So look at humor. Getting a smile, connecting, goes a long way. They're judging you on your handshake and your appearance. Can you connect with them? Now, we know connectivity has four parts. Of course, finding similarities. You could find something similar with everybody you meet. You have to do it in a way that it doesn't seem cheesy or old-fashioned and that it's sincere and relevant to what you're talking about. Your appearance, we've talked about that with credibility. This is important too. How you look, the halo effect, your attractiveness, your accessories, the clothes you wear. Does it matter? Yes. Do the colors matter? Yes. Do people judge you? Well, we know they're not supposed to, but they do. Because in 30 seconds, they want to put you in a little box and categorize you, and you just hope they don't put you in a little box that puts cheesy, pest, unwanted, manipulative, deceptive person. You don't want that to happen. And also listening. Now you're saying to yourself, yeah, I know how to listen. No, you don't. It's the woebegone effect all over again. You rate yourself much higher than you actually should be in listening because no one's ever taught you how. You know, going to school and listening and taking notes and vomiting it on a test, that's not true listening. When you listen, your prospect or audience will tell you everything you need to know to persuade them. And that's by really listening with your eyes, with your heart, and with your ears. Not about worried what to say next or knowing that you have a great way to solve this objection. I mean truly listening. In fact, if you look at Fortune 500 companies, this is one of the number one thing they train on is listening training. They go, well, I know how to listen. Tell me you don't. I mean really listening. Just by looking at somebody, you know if they're lying or they're deceiving you or they're excited or they're ready to buy, that's listening. And if you're not able to get that through really listening and watching and following your instinct and listening to their words and watching their mannerisms, you've got some work to do. But that also helps you attract people to you or get people to like you. Because also under connectivity, we have mirror and matching. Very important. Looking at your nonverbals. We found that every gesture that you use will either attract or distract from your message. Can one gesture make someone a little nervous or tense inside enough for them not to do business with you? And the answer is yes. And most people we talk to, they have no idea what they are doing right and wrong in that situation. Record yourself. Videotape yourself. How are you coming across? You know, you have those annoying people in your life that come and tell you bad jokes. You laugh with them. You're glad to get rid of them. They're annoying. You really don't like them. That could be you. And you say, oh, no. Do people like you? Or are they just putting up with you? Because they're not going to tell you unless it's in some blind study, something we perform at the Persuasion Institute. How are you coming across? What are your first impressions? What are people thinking about you? Why aren't they returning your calls? It all comes down to these things. So think about it. Listening skills, connecting, those are all part of the likability inoculation. Now, you'll get objections that take you off guard. You'll get objections from time to time. And that's okay. That's part of the process. And that's a whole nother CD as far as solving objections if you weren't able to solve them before they happen. And you're not going to solve 100% before they happen. But there's the top 5 or 10 that you want to learn to solve before they happen. Others you need to be ready for. There's a certain formula, of course, you need to solve objections. That's in a whole different CD. Let's talk about inoculating, because that's the main goal. That's even more important than solving objections, is you're solving them before they even happen. So if you're looking at kind of a formula, I know many of you like different formulas. I love formulas or systems. That's what we put together. Okay, how do we do this? How do we put this together? Well, the first thing, of course, is let's identify the objection. What is it that's coming up again? What is the brick wall they're running into? Is it talking to a spouse? Is it time? Is it money? What is it that's holding them back? They can't see themselves doing it. And understand with objections, and when you have these knee-jerk reactions and people make up things, a lot of times they just can't see themselves doing what you're asking them to do. If you were selling passes at a water park and it was a great deal, they might say it's too expensive. A knee-jerk reaction, the reality is, they don't know how to swim, or they don't want to be seen in a swimsuit, and they won't reveal those things to you unless you're really good at persuasion and using questionings and understanding human nature. So is the objection, is it knee-jerk? Is it something they can't see themselves doing? Is it one of the objections that you are manifesting that you still have in your mind? Or, you know, is it a true objection? So that's the first thing. Okay, what is it that keeps coming up that's holding you back as far as really putting together a very powerful, persuasive presentation? That's number one. Number two, you need to sit down and find of either one of two things which work really well in the world of statistics. You need to find or create a story or a statistic. These two things, studies show, do the best in inoculating other people. Stories or statistics. Yes, which one do you use? Well, it depends on their personality type. A fact or statistic, of course, works better with some, you know, of your business types, your analytical types. And of course, most people love a great story. Can you create a story? Can you find a story? Sure you can. Now you need to look, where can you find a great story? Where can you find facts or statistics? So first of all, stories. Great persuaders are storytellers. There's no way around it. They're power tools for persuaders. The moment you tell a story, it draws your audience in. They help them understand and appreciate your message. They put themselves in the story. We all think of a time when we're bored, and if someone tells a story, it just grabs our attention. It just bypasses the logical mind and goes to the emotional mind, and that's where you want to be when you're persuading. Critical to understand that. So where can you find a meaningful story? You're not telling a story just to tell a story that will inspire them to reach the same conclusion you've reached, to pre-solve that objection. The story of someone who they didn't see the value, they thought it was too expensive, and they joined, and in 2 weeks they made this. They didn't have any room on their credit cards. Their home was going into foreclosure. Find real stories, but they're powerful. Because when you tell a story, it draws people in. It engages their mind. Whether it's a spiritual story or a humorous story or a heartwarming story or inspirational, scary story, you need to make sure that they're there. That you learn to tell stories. You must learn to be a great storyteller. And when you talk to your audience, They must feel the anxiety, the uneasiness that comes from anticipating the possible even greater negative emotions, pain, grief, loss, that'll be imminent if they don't do what you're asking them to do, that is likely to happen. And they're capable of doing what you're asking them to do. I could spend all day, this whole CD, on stories. I'm just saying, learn to tell stories. Find great stories. Don't become long-winded. You don't need a long story. It could be a couple minutes long. And that's the important thing when you're looking at telling stories. So that's one aspect. The next, we talked about statistics or even facts. Works very well. You know, evidence and even logic. We have a logical side to us, a statistic, which is kind of a form of social validation that the majority of the people are doing this. So you're looking for a statistic or a fact that has some type of social validation that is showing that the majority of the people are doing what you're asking them to do. Be careful with your statistics. You can use too many. Make sure you tell them where the statistic comes from, because if anybody's taking a statistic class in college or anywhere knows that you can cook the books. But a simple thing like 4 out of 5 dentists, you know, the American Dental Association found, or these guys found 4 out of 5 dentists. Pretty memorable and pretty powerful statistic. So statistics and facts work very, very well through this process. So as you prepare to inoculate, understand a fact, a statistic, something that they can grasp onto, that we are social creatures. That if you say 91% of Americans or 91% of the people or 91% of the people in this group do something, that's social validation. And for many people, that's all they need. Most people do what the crowd does, period. If there's a line, they'll get in it. So that helps you identify that social validation. And if you're using those facts or statistics, make sure that it's supported by an independent expert, that someone else can verify it, that it's someone they can believe into, that you document all your sources. People appreciate that. And one simple thing that we're finding, when you can say or use, when we talk about verbal packaging, again, that's a whole other lesson, verbal packaging says just by using the word fact increases the persuadability. The fact is, the facts show, the fact remains. Try to pepper that within your presentation. Very important when we look about evidence. It's verifiable, it's specific. That if you can use a personal experience, even better. And evidence is very important when the audience is very unfamiliar with your topic. That is number 2. Okay, we talked about identifying your objections, and we talked about creating or finding a story or statistics. Number 3 is you build that into your presentation before that objection happens. You're an engineer. You're putting things together. You're setting things up. So you're building the presentation before the objection happens. That's key. So if you get the objection right here in part C, put it in part B. Test it out. Try it out. Make it become you. And understand, anything you try for the first time doesn't work. The first time you golf or bat or wakeboarding or skiing or snow skiing, whatever it is, the first time you try something, it doesn't always work exactly like you think. You try it, you fine-tune it, you use it. You become a student of persuasion. And then number 4 is, after you've done that, you want to make sure you add some type of question. And remember, great persuaders ask 3 times more questions than average persuaders. So what I want you to do is confirm with a question somewhere that objection's not going to come up. Confirm somehow that they've given past it, they can see what you're talking about, they understand it. Very important. Inoculation. Wow. What an incredible principle. Because remember, every time your prospect, your audience, has a concern, it builds into an objection, it becomes a roadblock, it's like smashing into a brick wall. They're a little dazed, a little confused, they're stuck on that point. Great persuaders solve objections before they happen. And remember the different types of objections that we're seeing. The ones that you're creating, the false knee-jerk reactions, and the true ones. But take a look at your presentation, record it, videotape it. Might be a new principle for many of you, and that's great. It's one of the many tools of persuasion. You need to learn these tools. Inoculation is one of the hundreds of tools of persuasion. Most persuaders use the same tools, 2 to 3, over and over and over again. Top producers are using 7 to 8 tools over and over again. And as Maslow says, if the only tool in your toolbox is a hammer, you're treating everyone like a nail. So get some different tools. Try some things out. Make them part of you. And when you get to the keys of the piano of persuasion, instead of playing Mozart, you can play chopsticks. Because it gives you courage, confidence, conviction when you know you can customize your presentation. Your prospect or audience should be the one dictating what you say and what you do and which questions you ask. Your presentation every time should be pretty different. That's when you know you're following the prospect, you're customizing to them, you're using the tools that they need, and you'll see a dramatic increase in your income, your ability to persuade, and even your happiness. So try this tool, use it, maximize it. If you have any questions, give us a call, learn how to persuade, and go out and make the world a better place.